Hello, podcasters, and welcome once again to this series of podcasts brought to you in association with Kilkenny Library Services and the Government's Decade of Centenaries Fund through Kilkenny County Council. My name is Owen Swinton Welsh, and in these podcasts, we examine different aspects of Kilkenny's revolutionary era history. Today, and over the course of two podcasts, we will examine the Great Kilkenny Jailbreak of the 22nd of November 1921. Now, sometimes we are prone to exaggerate and say local events of the War of Independence made national news or were well known outside the county, when that really mightn't be the case at all. However, that was not the situation with the Kilkenny jailbreak. It was a national story and went global. In modern day parlance, one might say it went viral. The story of how 44 men burrowed their way out of the prison is a story of universal appeal, no matter what language one might speak. Add into the mix that one of these escapees was a Catholic priest, and that two of the men were technically still on death row, and you have a near Hollywood type script. It was the largest jailbreak in Irish prison history up to that point. Now, I should say that over 50 people had escaped from the RAS internment camp in the Curragh in September 1921, just 2 months before, but most of these were recaptured. Moreover, that was a makeshift camp and not a bricks and mortar prison like Kilkenny. Kilkenny Jail had done its job of keeping people inside its four walls since 1820, just over 100 years previously. So this was a huge embarrassment for the British authorities when people escaped. But first, just to set the scene generally of what was happening in Kilkenny and indeed Ireland at this time. It was a politically sensitive time for the Sinn Féin organisation. Its leaders, Arthur Griffith and Michael Collins AL, were still in the midst of the treaty negotiations in London. The outcome of these discussions was not yet known, and the talks could easily have broken down at any time. And I think that is something we should not forget. We know now that a treaty was signed in December and prisoners were released after that. But when looking at this, we should put ourselves in the mindset of the people of November 1921 and not read history backwards. Political prisoners in Kilkenny Jail in November 1921 did not know if these negotiations would break down and war with the British would start up again. Could they be in jail for another year or worse, maybe? Indeed, there were rumours nearly every second week that the talks in London were going to break down without agreement at any minute. The lack of any political progress in securing their release was understandably frustrating for all political prisoners, and not just the ones in Kilkenny. No doubt, some of them would have felt disappointed with De Valera and Collins for not obtaining their release as a prerequisite of going into negotiations with the British in the first place. Remember, the majority of the political prisoners were internees. They had not faced a civilian trial with a jury, but instead were imprisoned under military martial law rules. So all in all, many prisoners felt completely forgotten about. In Kilkenny, however, there was a very active Cumann na mBan organisation. They organised rotas to visit the prisoners on a regular basis. This was very important as prisoners came from all over Ireland and not just Kilkenny. Indeed, as we will learn, the 44 escapees came from 18 different Irish counties. Cumann na mBan also brought the prisoners parcels, which included cakes and biscuits and the like. They launched fundraising initiatives such as Kaylee's, one of which was held in Kilkenny Courthouse, no less. Charity challenge hurling matches were another way to raise funds to create these parcels and also to give financial support to the families of the prisoners, as the incarcerated men were often the only breadwinners in their families. Indeed, the warders were often jealous of the prisoners' ample selection of cakes and treats, often better than they had themselves. Now, just to give you a bit of geography of where the prison was, those listening from Kilkenny now will know there is no prison in Kilkenny nowadays. The building was knocked down in the 1940s, but there is a few clues in the street names. It was less than a mile from the city centre on the west side of the city. So just to get your bearings, turn off High Street onto Friary Street. At the end of Friary Street, you will come to James's Green. The road diverges in two around the green. People will note there where the cinema is. At the end of these two roads, you come on to St. Rock Street. The imposing structure of Kilkenny Jail would have once greeted you from there, from actually 1820 when it was first built up until 1948. In its place today are St. Rock's Court and St. Francis Terrace, along with other streets around that area which were once part of the prison complex. So the 1820 prison is not to be confused with the old courthouse, aka that's Grace's Castle on Parliament Street, which did contain prisoners prior to 1820, as people would know, whoever did a walking tour of Kilkenny. In peacetime, an average of just 30 prisoners would be in the jail at any one time. But as we will see, by the day of the planned prison escape, the prison population had swelled to well over 100. Now, just to give you a little bit more about life inside Kilkenny Jail, since the truce, conditions within the jail had actually improved for the prisoners. On the whole, the Kilkenny prison governor, who was John Boland, tolerated the special status of the prisoners and often gave in to their demands. This was important for the internees too. In other words, they were political prisoners and not ordinary decent criminals. This light touch approach by Boland was an understandable attitude to have. He had learned from experience. When Boland was chief warder of Mountjoy Prison in 1917, Thomas Ashe, who was then one of only two 1916 rising combatants to survive and not be executed, the other being De Valera, of course, died during hunger strike as a result of force feeding. The prisoners in Kilkenny Jail in 1921 didn't leave Boland forget his role in that tragedy. Death of Ashe under his watch resulted in Boland becoming public enemy number one. A similar episode in Kilkenny then was to be avoided at all costs. Now there was two wings in Kilkenny Jail at the time. The political prisoners were mostly kept in A wing of the prison, which was also known as the short term wing. Martin Keeley, who lived most of his life in Blanchfield Park in Gorran, had been elected combatant or spokesperson for the political prisoners inside Kilkenny Jail. Keeley was the 4th Kilkenny Battalion OC until his arrest by auxiliaries the previous September 1920. He had been caught in the field while he was engaging in volunteer inspections and drilling. Keeley had previous bad memories of Kilkenny Jail. His brother, John, died when marched from the prison 5 years earlier after Easter 1916. Both men had been arrested following the rising as they were known members of the Kilkenny Irish Volunteers. John Keeley had been suffering with chest conditions, likely pneumonia, but got no medical treatment in jail. He literally dropped dead just yards from his home on John Street. The 1916 prisoners were being transferred by rail to jails in England at the time. The news of his brother's death was kept from Martin Keeley until his release to try to keep his spirits up. Now back to Kilkenny Jail in 1921, Martin Keeley described his interactions with Boland and life inside the prison. I have a quote from him here. I had several interviews with the prison governor, Boland. I soon realised that he was anxious to avoid anything in the nature of prison disturbances or hunger strikes, and before long we had the rules and regulations of the prison modified and altered to our satisfaction. A number of prison warders were sympathetic towards us and were very helpful, with the result that we were able to procure from outside sources messages and articles which we would not be allowed through regular channels. End quote. Indeed, another prisoner, Edward Balfe from Enniscorthy, County Wexford, was even permitted to have his camera in prison along with the accoutrements for developing the images so he could indulge in his passion for photography. He took photos of the inmates and presented them to their spiritual advisor, as he puts it, who was the prison chaplain, Father Holland. Indeed, Balfe told another story of how he helped Father Delahunty communicate with students in nearby St. Kieran's College, where Father Delahunty had gone to school and been trained. Quote, in the wing of the jail which we occupied, there were two rows of disused cells on the top balcony. Strands of barbed wire only a few inches apart were stretched from balcony to balcony on one side to the balcony on the opposite side. A sufficient number of those strands were cut to allow entry into this prohibited place, which gave us a good view over a large area of the surrounding high wall and particularly of St. Kieran's Seminary. Two of the students there were attracted by our presence at the gable end window, and one of them brought out flags and signalled a few words to us and then inquired of Father Delahunty's welfare. He happened to be by my side at the time, and through a broken pane of glass I was able to communicate with them, prompted by his reverence. End quote. So, by November 1921, the prison population inside Kilkenny Jail had been growing steadily. Not because more political people were being arrested, this was not allowed under the truce, But as a result of prisoners being transferred from the RAS internment camp in Dacora and Spike Island prison in Cork, there had been hunger strikes, fires and riots down in Spike Island. The internment camp there was vastly overcrowded with primitive conditions. The authorities actually believed over £20,000 worth of damage had been caused. Kilkenny Jail, ironically, as it turned out in the end, was considered a much more secure option. Now, one of those recently arrived prisoners from the Dacora was Tom McCarrick from Ballinacroe, Sligo, later Carrick Shannon, and a leading officer in the IRA in Sligo Leitrim. He was becoming something of an expert on prison tunnelling, having been involved in one of the two tunnels created in the Dacora rat camp. Throw into the mix that Tom had experience in the Arigna coal mines in Roscommon before the Troubles, so he was the right person for the job. Although he was recaptured upon the escape from the Dacora in September 1921, just 2 months before, he now set his sights on tunnelling out of the much more difficult bricks and mortar Kilkenny Jail. Martin Keeley, the Episcopal Prisoners OC, wholeheartedly agreed. A plan was quickly formulated. Now, it should be said that permission for an escape attempt from Kilkenny Jail was neither asked nor given from IRA GHQ, which is unsurprising. They were doing this on their own terms. So, this is roughly how it went. Firstly, the prisoners gained access to a long disused punishment cell, which was directly below their recreation cell. These underground punishment cells were from the Victorian era and had not been used for many years. The current warders didn't even have access to them. The prisoners cut a small hole in the floorboards of their recreation cell and dropped down through this trapdoor to the disused cell underneath. They could easily cover the hole in the recreation area with a mass so it wouldn't be seen and then just pop back up through the hole when they had to be locked back in at night for the headcounts. Now, to start off, once access was made to the disused underground cell, they had to cut through bars to get into another cell that was at the exterior wall of the prison. I'll leave Martin Keeley pick up the story from here. Quote, a hacksaw was procured with the assistance of a sympathetic warder, and by sawing off a few feet of three or four of the flooring boards, entrance was gained to the underground cell. The bars of the window of the underground cell were next removed by sawing through them at the top and the bottom with the hacksaw. As this window was only about 2 feet below the ground level, it was necessary to burrow downwards first for a further few feet so as to ensure that sufficient earth was overhead to withstand any traffic that might pass over the tunnel. The tunnelling was very tedious and fraught with difficulties. End quote. Now, before they could even start to bore a tunnel, the first task was to break out through the stone foundations of the jail building itself. This was likely the trickiest and hardest task of the whole enterprise. It took many attempts and a lot of brawn to break through the keystone out of the foundation structure of the prison block wall. The prisoners had obtained an iron bar from the prison shed, and this was used by Joe Connor and Tom McCarrick to eventually push out the keystone using the bar as a lever. It was only when this was done that it enabled the men to commence digging a tunnel underneath the yard and thus out beyond the perimeter wall. Now, I should have actually said their main implements for excavating the tunnel was a trowel that had been stolen from the prison tool shed, while fire pokers, knives and sharpened spoons were also used. The poker was used to loosen the earth. Pillowcases and blankets that had been tied together to make ropes were used to extract earth from the tunnel. This clay was put into other parts of the underground unused cells. It would take some time, as you can imagine, to dig this thing, so Keeley arranged for 3 shifts a day of 3 men in each shift. Just one would work on the tunnel, the other two acted as a lookout, and the other removed the excavated earth. 3 people would not be missed from the crowded wing. Thus, prisoners worked relatively unhindered on the tunnel when they were on shift, as the prison authorities had no idea that tunnelling was literally taking place just under their feet. As the tunnel developed, it was also vital to reinforce it so it would not collapse. Improvised supports were made using planks of wood from the bedboards of the prison cells, while it also probably made their beds much more uncomfortable to sleep in. The distance underground from the cell to the nearest point outside the prison perimeter wall was 40 feet, or about 12 metres. Conditions within the ever-expanding tunnel were far from ideal. The 3-foot-high by 2-foot-wide tunnel was not ventilated. The cramped conditions meant it could become unbearably hot, while there was also a constant stench of perspiration. In addition, during the course of the excavations, the prisoners came across human bones in what had been a lime pit. Not a nice discovery, I would think. These would have been the graves of convicts hanged in the prison during the previous century. Now, I'm so fortunate to have an audio recording of one of those who escaped from Kilkenny Jail. This was sent on to me by Brian Condren, and it is a recording that was made in the early 80s with James or Jimmy Kelly of Gashill, Offaly, before he passed away. In it, Jimmy describes how the tunnel was dug and tells the story of how one man nearly died while digging the tunnel due to the lack of oxygen. He also tells a humorous story of how he had to pretend to be another prisoner, Joe O'Connor. O'Connor was down in the tunnel digging away when a visitor came to prison to see him. There was no way of getting him up from the tunnel so fast, so Jimmy pretended he was Joe as to not alert the warders one man was missing. As a policy, the prisoners never gave the warders the same name twice so as to confuse them. Luckily, the visitor who came to see Joe played along with it. So here's the voice of Jimmy Kelly of County Offaly, one of the escapees of Kilkenny Jail in November 1921.
We give the job of cutting the last sod to a McCarrick from the Rigna coal mines, because he's the principal man. And then getting out through that tunnel, we came over a lot of lime. And we thought it was the foundation of the outside wall, and it wasn't. It was where someone was buried one time. I suppose those along there didn't matter. The governor was Johnny Borland, who was in Mountjoy when Tomash was murdered. That's why I have him down there. He was off, we used to remind him of it, mention of Ash's name, and he went out of his way to meet you. It wasn't the jail as I knew them. Then you were allowed to mix, you see, because sure, if we get what you pretty well like that place, you see, we are litter every week and parsons if we want them and all that sort of thing. Yeah. And all you have to do is shout Johnny Ball and the whole Ash. Mm. He's not what you need. The tans were outside, but the lorry used to pass over the place we were making. Mm. Well, I won't say about, we were near being caught once. See, we tore up the blanket, old blankets and yokes and made ropes over them. And now we look like a pillowcase. And they got down underneath. And you, one went in, you see, the tunnel, we made it with an old poker and something else in our hands. And one went in, do you see, and when he was in for a while, he came out and the fellow at the top, he brought in the bag with him, they see, and you pulled it back and we emptied it in. There were plenty of room on the ground. And one day, one morning we were in, there was two, I don't know who was with me now, but we had a butt of a candle, do you see, for light, and a box of matches. And you lit the candle. And after a while, there was no noise from the man inside. He used to pull, give it a jerk, do you see, when he would have it filled. So there was no noise, and I jerked it a few times, and no good. And I went in, and as I was getting in through the old tunnel, do you see, it was just about enough that you could get creep through. Mm-hmm. There was terrible. So I searched around, the candle was out. I searched around and caught him by the heels and pulled him back out. He come all right after a few minutes. But if he had been much longer in it, we know he was, we could do nothing for him because there wasn't much air in the basement. Yeah. And foolish enough what he was doing, when the bloody candle went out, he should have known to come back. And says, I start lighting matches, and that finished anything was in it. It come all right. You see, they answered different names. I slept in your cell and you slept in my cell, and that's, and I answered your name, you answered mine. Oh, yeah. You see, and now there was a few, one time a visitor came. You see, a fella came to visit us, and Joe Connor was down working at it. And Joe and I, you see, being old pals, I knew a good deal about him. So what the hell are we going to do? After a quick decision to know what we do, and after them shouting for Joe Connor, I answered for Joe, you see. Mm-hmm. And was told, why the hell did it take so long? But there was one warder there, and he was in Tullamore, Barry, I think, Simlinda. He was in Tullamore one time, and he was sort of sympathetic as far as he could go. Mm-hmm. I answered for Joe, do you see. So Joe's mother wasn't well at the time, and I was afraid before he was going down there could be one of the sisters with that, you see, and it'd be very awkward then.
Yeah.
You see, it'd be very hard. But lucky enough,
then
we were lucky again. So I went across, I said, Joe's all right. So my man copped on, you see, immediately. And they came back out then to my side of it, and I asked about my mother and the girls, and they called, I could call them by their name for hearing Joe talking about them and all about them. And everything passed off grand. We were very near being caught though.
It's brilliant to have that there. Now, things were not going to be easy, of course, and not just with the tunnelling. During the week before the planned escape, as the tunnel was making good progress, a number of unforeseen incidents occurred that had the potential to impede all their plans. Father Patrick H. Delahunty, originally from Coromartin, Munkine, and later the Catholic Curious of Callan, who was one of the prisoners, made his own escape bid. He had been one of the original founding members and supporters of the Callan Irish Volunteers and Sinn Féin clubs. The famed Republican priest, nicknamed the Irish Rebel Priest in Kilkenny, was arrested in Callan the previous year in September 1920 for the possession of seditious literature. So he was about halfway through his two-year sentence at this time. He was then located in the hospital wing of the jail as he had been feeling unwell. He hadn't known about the tunnel at this stage. Unbeknownst to the tunnellers in A-Wing, Father Delahunty was going to attempt his own escape bid the week before they were due to make theirs. How Father Delahunty's escape bid came about was as follows. As happened on occasion, gifts were often sent in to him from supporters outside. One day a loaf of fresh bread was delivered. It was soon discovered that this loaf of bread contained the additional ingredient of hacksaw blades. Very useful. Father Delahunty then proceeded to saw through each of the iron bars of his cell window as quietly as he could, but his handiwork was discovered by a very vigilant warder just before he could escape, and just as he was nearing cutting the last bar. Although his escape bid leaked to the press, surprisingly Governor Boland did not punish Father Delahunty in any way. Instead, he sent him back to the short-term A-Wing. But as luck, or perhaps prayers would have it, Father Delahunty arrived back in A-Wing just in time for the completion of the escape tunnel. Now, another potential threat to the planned escape attempt occurred just a few days before the estimated completion of the tunnel. The population of Kilkenny prison swelled, with 75 prisoners were transferred from Spike Island Prison to Kilkenny on Friday the 18th of November 1921, just 4 days before the planned escape. The Spike prisoners had been shackled together in pairs, brought by ship to Waterford, and then brought by train from Waterford to Kilkenny under armed escort. As the long-term wing of the prison was overcrowded, about 12 lucky prisoners from the 75 were placed in the short-term wing for two to sleep just as an escape tunnel was finished. Now, as we have learned from the archives, it wasn't all just luck that the 12 managed to get into A-Wing. William McNamara, one of the newly arrived prisoners, described what happened to him when he arrived in Kilkenny. Quote, I had a bit of good luck, however. Our arrival caused the jail to become overcrowded, especially in the long-term wing. As we lined up to be allocated to ourselves, I met a warder named Frawley, who had been in Mountjoy during the big hunger strike there in 1917. He was in sympathy with Sinn Féin and recognised me as soon as he saw me. He told me to wait back at the end of the line. I did so. There was no more room in the long-term wing for the last 10 or 12 of the crowd who had come up from Spike Island, with the result that they had to be accommodated in the short-term wing. These short-term prisoners, all political of course, had been working on an escape tunnel. On the night after we joined them, we were asked to attend a meeting which they had arranged. To my great delight, I learned that the escape had been planned and we were to be allowed to go with them. End quote. Those were the words of William McNamara from Clare. So that story lets us know that some of the warders probably knew something was afoot. They mightn't have known exactly it was a tunnel. They had given them a hacksaw, so perhaps they thought that was the escape route. It shows how Irish warders had competing opinions. Some were willing to help the prisoners if they themselves weren't implicated. Okay, so they weren't willing to give up their good pensionable job in His Majesty's prison services, but they were willing to lend a hand and or turn a blind eye to things. The addition of the new inmates caused another headache for prison OC Martin Keeley. Security was substantially increased and military personnel were drafted in to augment the prison warden staff. This included a number of black and tans who patrolled the outside perimeter wall of the jail, which would most likely scupper the planned escape even if they managed to get outside the walls. Keely then sent for his friend, Peter DeLucri, Sinn Féin mayor of Kilkenny at the time, who duly arrived in the prison. Now, DeLucri himself was no stranger to prisoners, or prison escapes for that matter. He had made the key for his prison mate, Eamon de Valera, that allowed him to escape from Lincoln Prison nearly 3 years earlier. Keely pointed out to DeLucri that the placing of a quasi-military guard outside the walls of the prison in full uniform was in breach of the truce. DeLucri subsequently complained about this to the military authorities in Kilkenny Barracks, and the guard was removed the very day of the planned escape. So, after 3 weeks of digging, with unerring willpower and resolve, the mostly amateur miners burrowed their way through the stone foundations of the perimeter wall, and by Monday evening, the 21st of November, they reported to Keely that they believed they were about 10 feet outside the prison wall. Now, in anyone's book, given what they had to hand, it was an amazing piece of engineering and endurance, and completed in a relatively short space of time. After a hastily arranged meeting, it was decided to plan the escape attempt for 6 p.m. the following evening. They needed the November darkness to aid their escape, but also didn't want to leave it too late, as they would have to be locked into their cells for the night at around 8 p.m. So there was actually only a small window of opportunity. Now, as the day of the planned escape dawned, that is Tuesday the 22nd of November 1921, another unpredictable event arose. That morning, in an unrelated incident, John Boland, out of nowhere, was replaced as governor of Kilkenny Prison. Captain Hubert Burke, former governor of Water Jail, took his place. It is likely the Crown Force Services didn't think poor Boland capable of handling the extra prisoners, especially since Father Delahunty nearly got out the week before. Now, on the one hand, maybe all this internal prison politics was good for the prisoners, as it distracted the warders. But on the other hand, the prison warders would likely now be more alert and eager to impress their new boss. Although the prisoners could put off their escape plan, they thought it would be better to go ahead, as they feared the new governor would implement a harsher daily routine with less time outside their cells. Their worst fears looked to be coming to fruition. At 6 p.m. on the 22nd of November, the exact time scheduled for the escape, Governor Burke made an impromptu inspection of the prison. He thoroughly examined the cells. Luckily for the prisoners, he did not find anything untoward. Or most importantly, should I say, he did not discover the entrance to the underground cell that led to the tunnel. So once Burke, the new governor, had gone for the evening, the escape was initiated as planned. Now, on that cliffhanger, I think we leave it there with part one of this dramatic story. Please listen in to part two to find out what happened next. Until then.